Former Sotheby's chairman Alfred Taubman has been sentenced to a year in prison and fined millions of dollars for his role in an art world price-fixing scheme. Taubman is the latest of a number of prominent executives who have been caught cheating. In the 1980s, some Wall Street financiers went to prison for deals involving junk bonds and hostile takeovers. NPR special correspondent Susan Stamberg continues her Tuesday morning series on cheating with a journalist who won the Pulitzer Prize for his coverage of those Wall Street scandals.
In the 80s, names of some of those Wall Street high flyers became so familiar. Michael Milken, king of the corporate junk bond market. Ivan Boesky, arbitrageur extraordinaire. Journalist James B. Stewart called his book about them Den of Thieves. Mr. Stewart reminds us of what those Wall Street cheaters did.
They committed financial fraud, giving the public an impression that A is going on when really they know that it's B. In Boesky's case, it was primarily through insider trading, getting secret information that hadn't been released to anyone else and using that to trade in stocks to financial gain. Milken was much more complicated. There were elements of insider trading, but also secretly amassing large positions of stock, which should have been disclosed to the public, which then was a springboard to all of those hostile takeovers.
Mm-hmm. And They loved it, didn't they? They kind of got a rush from the notion of being able to do wrong on such a huge scale and to such great personal benefit.
Oh, I don't think there's any question about that. I mean, one of the interesting things about the financial crime in the 80s is that even when people knew they were under investigation, they kept doing it. They really couldn't stop. It was almost like it was an addiction at this point. And I think there were several elements. There was, of course, the great wealth that came to them, I mean, hundreds and hundreds of millions of dollars, and then all of the trappings, the ostentatious display that went with that in the case of Boesky. Milken, I don't think that was a thing. He wasn't ostentatious about it, although he made more money than anyone. Billions of dollars he amassed in a fortune. In his case, I think it was the power that being able to manipulate these levers to see entire corporations change ownership when you're the one, the mastermind behind all of that. It was extremely heady. And as I said, people just found it irresistible once they were caught up in it.
Who got hurt by what they did?
Well, in all of these crimes, the victims are numerous. I mean, I think in the broadest sense, the 80s, people came to believe that the stock market was a rigged game. And in many ways, it was a rigged game. It was ludicrous how many people were copying Milken and Boesky and illegally making money. And that alienates everyone. If you get the sense that our financial markets are essentially a casino, why do you, the average investor, want to invest? No, you're the one who's getting taken advantage of. Mm-hmm. And so really was undermining confidence in the markets. I think the crackdown on fraud in the 80s, which resulted in the convictions of Boesky and Milken, helped restore investor confidence and really set the stage for the great bull market of the 90s, which, of course, is now over. And there's a new crisis of confidence in the markets in different arenas.
Well, which brings us to Enron, the energy traders, the biggest bankruptcy now in the history of the United States. Is this deja vu all over again, Mr. Stewart?
I find it amazingly so. I mean, yes, the characters have changed. The means of financial fraud has changed. But everything else is exactly the same. The accumulation of wealth, the accumulation of power, the competitive drive to stay on top, to beat the competitors, to keep it rolling. And then, of course, what I always find so fascinating, the cover-up when it all starts to unwind. Again, the same tendency to sort of keep doing it, just in sweep it under the rug, lie, destroy documents, cheating. Just like in the 80s, the cover-up is in many ways more egregious than the original offenses.
Now, there were no lessons to be learned today from the 80s. I mean, these guys, those 80s inside traders, they served time in jail. They paid enormous fines.
Absolutely. And I think, you know, it would be too cynical to underestimate the beneficial effect that had. I mean, there was a dramatically different mood on Wall Street after those convictions for a while. I mean, that problem has not really resurfaced, but it moved into another area, this whole area of accounting fraud, of corporations overstating earnings, of these off-balance sheet partnerships. I mean, these people are very smart, and they come up with these cunning new vehicles to essentially achieve the same illegal ends. And I think that's what we've been seeing. Now, I also think this whole process has speeded up. You know, the last great era of financial fraud before the 80s on Wall Street was in the late 20s, just before the stock market crash. And the prophylactic effect of those prosecutions lasted, you know, like 50 years. And, well, maybe the 80s lasted 10. So you can see our attention span has shrunk over the course of the century.
Yeah, but you know what you're saying is the impulse to cheat when such enormous amounts of money are available is utterly seductive. It's impossible to tamp it down. It's going to find its way out.
Well, it's unquestionably an element in human nature somewhere. I mean, in some people, obviously, more than others. But one thing I discovered early on talking to people when I was reporting about Wall Street is I would meet these people. They would have this enormous wealth. I would say, well, what do you do with all this money? I mean, why do you need more? And they would look at me like I was from another planet. And I came to realize it was not about what the money did. It was just scorekeeping. It was like, you know, the score in a basketball game when the buzzer goes off. You have to be on top. You want to be on top. This great competitive drive and this tremendous insecurity if you weren't on top. It was very fascinating, the whole psychology of it all. But it just doesn't go away.
Mr. Stewart, I want to read you something, a passage a friend handed to me from John Steinbeck's Cannery Road. This is written in 1945. Here's what Steinbeck says. "It has always seemed strange to me," said Doc, "the things we admire in men, kindness and generosity, openness, honesty, understanding, and feeling, are the concomitants of failure in our system. And those traits we detest, sharpness, greed, acquisitiveness, meanness, egotism, and self-interest, are the traits of success. And while men admire the quality of the first, they love the produce of the second."
Yeah, very insightful. I mean, I also had a sense that, you know, those qualities he's talking about, those good qualities, the openness, the honesty, the generosity, yes, they are admired. They're admired on Wall Street as well. And to some extent, they play an important role in the workings of the business world. And yet, you definitely get the sense that you spot some of those people or the other traders, and, you know, they know they're victims the minute they walk through the door. They know they are going to be chewed up and spit out long before the end of the trading day.
And yet they go back tomorrow.
Absolutely.
James B. Stewart was awarded the Pulitzer Prize for reporting on the financial scandals and stock market crash of 1987 for the Wall Street Journal. Stewart's book about the financial fiascos of the 80s is called Den of Thieves. I'm Susan Stamberg, NPR News, Washington.